and welcome to the Original Content Podcast. I'm Anthony Ha.
I'm Jordan Crook.
And I'm John Schieber.
Welcome back to the podcast, John.
It's great to be here.
Woo!
What we're going to do is we're going to recap some of the latest streaming news like we always do, and then we're going to review this new romantic comedy on Netflix, Set It Up.
More like Let Me Down.
Oh my God. Wow. Get out. Just get off the... Get off. Just hang up. I'm serious.
Also wrong on top of everything else.
Exactly. Like, oh God.
Oh, well, let's get to
so
the news.
Sick of having to explain things to men. Okay. Okay. Yeah, sure. Let's go with the news. But in personal news, guys, I do have a little bit of an announcement. It's a weird place for me to make this announcement, but I got AirPods.
Oh, yeah. How you feeling about them?
I feel good. I made a deal with myself that I bought four of the lightning to headphone adapters when I got my new iPhone, which was like a year ago. And I was like, I know I'm going to lose one or two of these. I'm sure I'll break one. Like, I'm going to get four. And then when I've run out, I'll break down and get the AirPods. And I ran out. I broke the last one that I had. And I just hopped into the Apple store in Williamsburg and got me a pair. And I'm feeling pretty cool. I'm feeling pretty good about myself, even though I'm late to the game. So,
yeah, I made the switch. I got a new iPhone sort of towards the end of last year and kind of had the same thing where I was like trying to use the adapters for, I think, only for about a month. And then I was just like, screw this. This sucks.
It does suck. They made it suck. Like, they made it as sucky as it could be. I swear those adapters are the lowest quality Apple product that has ever existed. Like, why are they breaking? It's one thing to lose them, but, like, I broke three of them. Or they just, like, come apart. Like, the part that plugs into the lightning, there's, like, a little bit of casing around it, the same way as, like, a charging cord. But the casing itself, like, pulls out. Like, it just, like, breaks in half. Like, they purposefully were like, this is going to be the shittiest product that you could possibly own. You will hate it. You will upgrade. Like, start saving now.
Well, and I think it's also that because it's at the bottom of the phone, right? So the design is just kind of awkward, where like there's just constant stress on it because it's kind of being pulled in a weird direction.
I did notice, however, that like in using my AirPods, like they break up sometimes when my phone is in my pocket and I'm like walking through the city, like the audio and stuff.
Well, it's just a shitty design decision, like on all fronts.
The AirPods?
Yeah, I think so. Headphones worked. That headphone jack was amazing. There's no need for any of that garbage.
That headphone jack was amazing. I'm going to quote you on that one. I love the headphone jack.
If it's not broke, don't fix it.
Oh, I hear you. I hear you. For sure.
And that you can plug a lot of different headphones into it rather than trying to like make this one specific Apple product work.
Anyway, sorry, I got us off topic. What's our news?
So Instagram, earlier this week, they announced a video hub called IGTV, which was, I think, the announcement was a little bit anticlimactic. I mean, partly because they had a press event that was, like, in multiple locations, but actually it was only really in San Francisco. So everyone else just got to, like, watch it on these TV screens that didn't work very well. Somewhat ironically, but also because our own Josh Constein had basically been like scooping this story for several, months beforehand. So at this point, we kind of knew it's been coming for a while. But the idea is you go into this section of Instagram or potentially a separate app, and you get like these videos from Instagram creators who could be, you know, Instagram stars or just regular people, and you can post videos that go for up to an hour. So I think it's live. Like this morning, I opened Instagram and it's already in there, and you can start seeing some videos. I don't know if you guys have checked it out.
No, I have not. I'm a pretty slow adopter, obviously, with the AirPods thing, just generally.
Well, I'm also like, particularly in Instagram, I'm very like, just like, I just like photos. Just give me photos, maybe like the little videos in the stream, but like stories mean nothing to me. I have so little interest in watching anyone's stories. So like the idea that I'll like do anything that's outside of the mainstream is very unlikely for me.
Well, it's like, it's kind of a sad thing, and it makes me curious because like, you know, Instagram launched right around the time that I started working at TechCrunch, maybe like a touch before. And like watching it evolve, I'm curious if like back, I don't know, I'm curious about like, let's say a grocery store that used to be like a mom and pop and turned into like a huge chain. And it, like all those people were like, remember the old days when customer service and like, you know what I mean? Like, that's what I feel like. I feel like Instagram, like watching them figure out their business is like rewarding so minutely compared to actually liking the service. Does that make sense? Like stories and the, I'm still very upset about the algorithmic timeline. Like, I don't think I'll ever let it go. And just watching it and like, you know, the money makes sense. Like the numbers all point to this evolution for Instagram making a lot of sense as a business. And like, I hate it as a user. And it's just like this sad thing that makes me sad.
Well, but I mean, does it make sense? I mean, it,
yeah, well, like stories are a great example. Like stories took their numbers up like some outrageous amount, right? Like their daily use went from like something like 10 or 20% to like 60% or some outrageous growth number. Don't quote me on the exact numbers, but I remember reading it and thinking like, wow, that's insane. So yeah, it's making sense. And same with the algorithmic timeline. Like the engagement went up, like, you hate it, but you are on it more, you know? And it's like this vicious cycle. It's a very Facebook thing to happen. You know what I mean? Like, I hate this and I'm here.
Well, but are you going to be there for TV? Do you want to watch an hour of video on Instagram?
Well, see, that's the thing. One, stories, same with what Anthony said. Stories never really caught me, you know? Like, I've probably clicked into stories 3 times since they've done it, and I've posted one thing to stories, and then I was over it. So stories didn't work for me, but it works for the masses. I assume this will be the same thing. And I also have pretty strong feelings about vertical video. Like, even, like, vertical video native platforms like HQ, like, I get bothered when there are 2 people on screen, you know? Like, every once in a while, he'll be like, oh, Michelle Kwan's actually in the studio. Like, this is Michelle Kwan, you know? And I'm like, ugh, this video is awful. You're, like, both crowding each other. Yeah, like, it just looks so stupid. So I'm kind of anti-vertical video. So I think that, like, on a more technical level, I'm not super for this, but also just, you know, the part of the reason that people find themselves in YouTube holes for so long is not because they're watching hour-long videos. Like, yes, I have watched an hour-long video on YouTube, but like, it's the sweet spot that we all know, 5 to 7 minutes, 3 to 7 minutes, and then, you know, the next video plays. I don't know if Instagram gave the hour limit as like you should be hitting an hour, or if it's going to look more like the 3 to 7 minute window that we have all kind of become addicted to. I don't really know.
I'm guessing it's the second one, because it's more like this is the technical limit is an hour, but make it shorter.
We'll see. I mean, I might, like, you know, they're just like anything else. It depends on what the content is, you know, so we'll see. I doubt it, though. I doubt I'll be interested, mostly because I don't really care about the influencers that I actually care about on Instagram are like the meme folks. You know what I mean? Like, and to say I care about them is a stretch. I enjoy the content, right? Like, I laugh along, and it's like a great time sink for the 30 seconds in between this or that, you know? And I don't know what that looks like in video form. I don't think it looks very good. Maybe if it's like, if they can pull off kind of what Vine did, like I could spend 20 minutes on Vine watching funny videos. But
yeah, what do you think, John?
What do you think? I mean, I think they had to come up with some sort of YouTube competitor. Obviously Facebook wasn't able to do it, and Facebook video hasn't taken off. Instagram is the platform for them, so they need to have this. But whether or not people will move onto it, I mean, I don't know. It depends on what they can get from a creator standpoint for short form content, which I think segues very well into what Apple has been doing around getting creators to make content for them, which might be a subject we want to discuss.
Oh, was that the segue?
I don't know.
Nice.
Could be.
That was good.
Well, like, Snapchat Discover didn't work, right? Like, isn't this something very similar to that?
Yeah, I think it is. Like, it feels. I mean, it's hard to say, right? Because I think like I would argue that Stories does not feel to me like an organic expansion of Instagram, and yet clearly for many people it worked fine. So it's hard. I don't know when you can sort of like bolt something on and then people are like, oh, this is great, I like it, versus why is this here? I don't, you know, get it away from me.
Well, some of it is platform, right? So just it has a Instagram has a massive platform, and that feature was completely copied from Snap. So
I feel like that feature is super organic. Like, because if you have Instagram, right, which is this content platform that people engage with so much, but as a you always have to balance in these situations creation versus consumption. And if you have the vast majority consuming and not creating on their own, then you run into an issue that is a similar issue that Vine had. Vine kind of leaned into it, whereas I don't think Instagram wants to lean into that. They want as even a ratio as possible. And so giving people a way to post what they always wanted Instagram to be, I think, which is like, oh, look at my lunch. Like, here's what I did tonight. Here's what I'm doing tomorrow. As opposed to like these kind of permanent moments you want to remember. It's like a little baby hybrid station, you know, where you can like just post your day and post inconsequential stuff and not worry about it being part of what has come to be a lot of people's like digital identity, especially like a younger generation. Like if you were to ask them like, where do I learn the most about who you are, you know, from a snapshot on some of these digital platforms, it wouldn't be Facebook, it wouldn't be LinkedIn, it wouldn't be Tinder, it would be Instagram. You know, that's where you see what I want to present to the world. But Stories fits into that extra piece of it where you can see all of it as opposed to just what I've curated for you.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And then I guess the question is, how much does, in some ways, I guess in IGTV sort of goes in the opposite direction where it's much more about this sort of consumption experience.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to Apple for real this time. Apple basically, it seems like at this point, has new content announcements like every week, which is kind of insane when you consider that they, you know, again, leaving aside this sort of earlier initiative of unscripted shows like Carpool Karaoke, you know, they've announced all these shows. Nothing has launched yet. You know, according to reports, basically, it's probably going to launch in like March of next year. Maybe that'll get pushed back. Who knows? They've got, I think, like more than 10 shows ordered at this point. This week, the things that they announced were they are placing a series order for this show, Little America, which they'd already been announced that they were developing, but now it really is going to be a series, which is an anthology series about immigrants. It has this really long list of talented producers, Camille Nanjiani, Emily V. Gordon, Alan Yang, who is one of the creators of Master of None. And then Apple also announced its first children's TV show. The details aren't totally clear yet, but they've basically struck a deal with Sesame Workshop, which makes Sesame Street. Apple will not be carrying Sesame Street itself, but it will be making. There will be a live action series, an animated series, and a puppet series from Sesame Workshop.
Bring back Fraggle Rock.
Bring back Fraggle Rock.
I'm not sure if I've ever actually seen Fraggle Rock.
Ah, Fraggle Rock is amazing. But it's Henson. It's not Sesame Workshop.
Still Muppets. Muppets.
Muppets.
I'm excited about the Little America one.
I'm excited about both of them. I mean, the talent that Apple has brought on board for all of these shows is really impressive. And I kind of don't mind the fact that they're being a little bit deliberate in the way that they roll this stuff out. I think they're just going to dump a massive amount of fairly good content onto the service at once, so people want to get on it.
I think that's a good strategy.
I mean, I think they're also like just building this pipeline of like where like it, so like they can launch in March, and then like it won't be this thing where like, for example, I signed up for CBS All Access when Star Trek Discovery came on, but as soon as Star Trek Discovery was over, I canceled because there was like nothing else to keep me around. And I think what they don't want that problem, so they want the idea of like big show in March, big show in April, big show in May, and like so that you just are like hooked for like, you know, I guess forever.
Right. And I mean, it's not that they don't have tentpole people working on stuff. So should, I mean, it looks pretty compelling. I'm intrigued.
Yeah, we'll see. I think it's worthless to, I mean, we can keep updating people on the shows they order, but like, we don't, they're either throwing money at something that like they're, that people won't fall for. It's all about that one show, right? It's like the same thing with Hulu and Handmaids, or I mean, I hesitate to say this with HBO because HBO has a track record of success, but they always have that one Sunday night show that kind of, you know, Sopranos or Game of Thrones or now Westworld. Like, it's all about the one show that really gets people addicted and becomes this cultural phenomenon, and the rest is a trickle effect. So we'll see what that is going to be.
That wasn't Deadwood? Deadwood wasn't the show?
Okay. Let's move on.
Well, that's the news. So I think we can now talk about Set It Up. And again, that is a new romantic comedy on Netflix. We should say, I think that we'll keep this spoiler-free at first, and then maybe if we get further along and we want to talk about the end or anything, we can do that with a warning. But for this initial discussion, let's keep it spoiler-free.
Let's start with John, because I'd like to slam dunk on him, so you have to set me up.
Well, look, you can spike it down. We've set it up for you. There. That was...
Man, your jokes this morning.
I know, it's early.
We're not loving them. Let's go back to the drawing board. No, seriously, John, you didn't like it, and I want to know why.
Well, I mean, it's not that I didn't like it. It was fine. It was a rom-com. It was like a very generic sort of paint-by-numbers rom-com.
Oh, continue.
Well, can we talk? I feel like every time I'm on the show, we do this. But can we talk about how they got like life at a venture capital firm completely
so wrong?
Wrong.
Yeah. Well, it read to me as very much generic finance office, and then at some point they said, let's make it a venture capital firm because that'll feel very 2018, but they changed nothing.
Yeah, that was a little, I'll give you that was like probably the one of the least inconsistent things, alongside the one guy, the main assistant man's haircut got out of control too.
What, the helmet? I feel like the helmet is in. The helmet is very 2018.
No, it's not that it wasn't in. It was that they didn't do a good job upkeeping it. So, like, in certain scenes, he looks really, really good. Like, it's, like, perfectly right. And then in other scenes, it's, like, grown out too much. And nobody thought, like, let's trim his hair before we shoot this really important scene. Because when it's grown out too much, he looks like an 8-year-old. But those are the two things that bothered me the most about the movie. So I'll give you that the VC, the whole situation, I mean... Granted, attitude-wise, a lot of VCs will act similar to the finance jerks. So maybe they got that part right in a way. But yeah, the office and the vibe were a bit off. I could tell you there's not like, you know, 100 people working in a VC office.
Well, and also they should just watch more Silicon Valley, bro. They would have gotten that at least a little bit more right.
I'm not kidding. A big Silicon Valley fan, but yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. It is a rom-com, but here's kind of my thesis on it. It took a lot of very cliche paint-by-numbers, like you said, pieces of a rom-com and made it its own. And I think that we're like due for kind of a resurgence of the rom-com, because for a really long time, like, there was a wave of really fantastic rom-coms that came out when I was in high school. Like, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days is probably one of my favorites. And then we got away from all of those and started layering romance into straight up comedies like Bridesmaids. And the problem with the rom-com was that it was like overdone so many times and poorly done. Like, you can't, it's just like any other kind of movie. Like, you can make a really amazing action movie, but if you don't do it right, if you don't pay attention to the nuance and the detail, it's not worth watching. And the same is true of a rom-com. It's all about like the fine tuning and the small things. And there are just these tiny unimportant conversations in this movie that are so funny and so well acted. And that's what makes the difference. It's not the romance and it's not the plot line. Those two things are actually like completely irrelevant with a rom-com.
No, a rom-com is 100% dialogue and chemistry, right? It's like
absolutely
whether the jokes land, whether the banter is witty and their repartee is there and there's some sort of spark between between the protagonists.
Absolutely. And I think on that, this did a really good job. And even when with little cliche moments, like the music was perfect, I thought. Like the soundtrack just hits because it's like old school rom-com, but this isn't an old school rom-com, right?
That's one of the things I was wondering about, is whether y'all felt that the soundtrack worked, because I don't really feel like two 20-somethings in New York right now would be listening to, you know, like the scene on the roof with the wedding party or the engagement party. Is that what people would dancing to? Like Romeo and Juliet by Dire Straits and whatever the hell else they were playing before?
So I think part of it, I think with that scene in particular, like I think younger couples, right? Remember in the beginning, she was like, we're too young to get married, right? I think younger couples who throw engagement parties like purposefully adulted up in a lot of ways. Does that make sense? Like instead of having Kesha on, they would have like old school love songs because they're grown-ups now, right? And they're getting married. So I thought that actually fit in pretty well to like the 2018 landscape of adults adulting. I'm more talking about like, you know, the actual score when, you know, the end happens without giving things away, right? Like that felt like a movie from 15 years ago with that score, but I fell for it, you know, because it's like, yeah, give me that classic ending. You know what I mean? Like I'm feeling that, you know, or the music when the credits roll, another like really oldies song. The opening music was like a very classic rom-com song. And it puts you in the mood, right? To be like kind of delighted by a rom-com. And, you know, I might be a sucker for that because there are a lot of rom-coms that I just love that I grew up on. But I feel like it works for the meta of this. You know what I mean?
Well, I was going to say, I think the music, which I also liked, although I can sort of recognize that parts of it are sort of familiar songs or music cues that you've heard in other rom-coms, it like ties into this broader thing of like how much you want it to innovate and how much you want it to sort of like follow the formula. And I feel like this is something that does a really good job, at least it sounds like for Jordan and me, of like going kind of right down the middle of like, you don't want it to feel exactly the same as a rom-com you saw 20 years ago, but it doesn't have to be that different. Like you want it to kind of hit the same beats. Minor spoiler, like the two romantic leads do end up together. And it's not like a thing that like ends in tragedy or anything. It hits those notes in a really good way. That makes it really satisfying, even though you can kind of tell, you know, as soon as they meet, you're like, okay, this is what's going to happen for the rest of the movie. And it more or less follows that pattern.
Absolutely. You know what's going to happen the moment that the movie starts, and you're okay with that because it's like, you know what I'm talking about? Like, sometimes I feel like when rom-coms are trying to be too different, they like put too high stakes a problem in the way of the characters, for example, like something that is irreparable and somehow they repair it. And that actually is not what would make a rom-com special. It really does come down to like really like moments of dialogue. They go down into the creepy Tim's office, give him a plant. Like, do plants actually grow here? No, they just die slowly. Like tiny things like that. Or when she goes into her boss's office and tries to convince her to get a bikini wax. Like that dialogue is so solid and so funny, like laugh out loud funny. I loved when the two guys are, he's explaining how his day at work went. And he said, man, he just totally lost it today. He tried to fire a mailman. Like, the mailman is employed by the U.S. government. Like, you know, like those little moments are what makes rom-com special. It's not even the couple getting together at the end, because you know that's going to happen the whole time. And whatever problem arises between them, you know, is going to be solved. It's really like the little things that make it fun to watch, you know, and fun to watch more than once, to be honest. Like, I could totally watch this movie again and be delighted. You know what I mean?
Well, also, it's, you know, maybe we all just need something that's a little stable right now, given how crazy the world is, which has always been a thing.
I actually agree with you. I've been watching some pretty dreary stuff lately. Like, I've been getting back into ER. I don't know if I mentioned this on the last episode. I'm watching ER again. So that's pretty dreary. And then I started The 100.
Oh, yeah. I love that show.
So, like, I've been, like, filling my content consumption time with, like, this very, like, dark world to match what's going on the outside. And, this was, like, such a nice feel good break, but I do think they did a couple things where they like kind of, you know, said not fuck the cliche, but like let's rework the cliche. Like there's a scene where he needs to rush to the airport and then he realizes he has 4 hours and like starts tooling around and then he's like, oh shit, I tooled around too long, and then he actually is late, you know? Like that's a perfect example of like not completely going paint by numbers, but still fitting in the mold enough to where you're like, ah, he made it in time, you know? But like, but also the reason he was going to the airport was a completely different reason from what we're used to in a rom-com. So it's like twice over remolded and reshaped to be something different. Did I say that exact thing on the last week's episode of the podcast in totally different context? I feel like I did, or I just got really strong deja vu. Okay.
Well, so, Jordan, you brought up an interesting thing, and I mean, I'm curious, Anthony, like, Jordan mentioned How to Lose a Guy in 10 Dates or whatever as one of your go-tos. 10 Days.
Please get it right. Show some respect.
Anthony, what are the rom-coms that really work well for you?
I would say, I mean, the big one, I mean, and my favorite movie of all time, which I don't know, is not necessarily a traditional rom-com, but is a comedy that is also a romance, which is His Girl Friday, is like my all-time favorite film.
That's a rom-com?
But like, what?
Isn't that a classic rom-com? Screwball?
Yeah, I mean, it's not, but like, I think like when people think of rom-coms now, they think of like the 90s Julia Roberts, Hugh Grant kind of things. And so like, it is a romantic comedy. It's not necessarily in that grouping that people think of when they talk about romantic comedy. But no, that's I mean, I love that movie. There was a period when I was in high school where She's All That was like a movie that I just watched a bunch.
She's All That was a good one.
Yeah.
What do y'all think of like 500 Days of Summer or Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind? Do those strike you as rom-coms or
no? Well, I didn't see the summer one, so maybe I probably need to see that, but Eternal Sunshine is not to me a rom-com. It's definitely like more of a drama than a romantic comedy, like a romantic drama maybe. I think of like, you know, My Best Friend's Wedding is one that I love. I know that's like a Julia Roberts 90s one, but it's a classic and it's super, super funny. But like 10 Things I Hate About You, that's a good one. What are some of the others
solid? Other movie that obviously I think like sort of casts a shadow over this one is Devil Wears Prada, which is like maybe like interesting because it's, I mean, there is a romantic, there is like a romantic pairing in there, and that is like kind of a thread in the movie, but it's really not the main part, but it feels a lot like a romantic comedy in a lot of ways. It has the same sort of like rhythms and visual style of a romantic comedy, but it actually kind of isn't.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's going to be interesting because like work almost like takes a third or fourth seat in most romantic comedies, right? Like even if you look at, and I'm sorry to keep using it as an archetype, but just in my mind it is an archetype for a rom-com, is How to Lose a Guy. Like, yeah, they both had jobs that they cared about and it actually spurred their forward motion romantically, but then those jobs end up being like the least important piece of the whole thing, whereas like in this one I feel like, yeah, their jobs are just take second fiddle to the romance that's happening on two different levels, but their jobs are still in the forefront the whole time. You know what I mean? And I think that that's we're probably going to see that more if people make more rom-coms around like, you know, the fact that it's like a multifaceted person we're talking about now. It's not just this woman who needs to fall in love, you know?
Yeah, I think, don't rom-coms fall into a few different tropes? There's like the business setting rom-com, there's the more like fate star-crossed lover rom-com. Like some of it is inter-office romance, and some of it is like drawn together by fate. Some of it is just sort of random life choices. I always think of like When Harry Met Sally as our rom-com that I have enjoyed in the past. I don't know if it holds up. I haven't seen it in...
No, I think it's still considered like one of the best rom-coms of all time. Like, I think it's going into the Hall of Fame, so to speak.
Well, and it sort of sets the template for a lot of what follows.
Well, I mean, but it rips off Annie Hall, right? So directly. And I mean, Woody Allen is now...
Boo!
Yeah. But that movie, Annie Hall, is one of the sort of great romantic bittersweet comedies, right?
Well, I think what holds true in the vast majority of rom-coms is that the two people that fall in love tend to hate each other at the beginning. You know what I mean? They tend to like really be annoyed by one another or bothered by one another. Again, like this falls right into that, but in a way that's distinct. And that's what counts, right? It's not like the overall plot. It's the nuance of it.
Right.
And, you know, there's lots of different buckets you could put. Like, I love, they're from, like, early aughts, the It's Complicated with Meryl Streep and Alec Baldwin, I think is a fantastic one. What's the one with Diane Keaton and Jack Nicholson?
Something's Gotta Give?
Something's Gotta Give. Like, that was a great one. They're, like, going to the older couples. They all have such
generic titles.
Yeah, right. but those are good romantic comedies, if not for the plot themselves, for the little bits of dialogue that you get. So, you know, I think that's what's worth it. And it's got to be said that the actress in this, what's her name, Anthony? The main young girl?
Zoe Deutsch?
Yeah, is just a killer, man. Like, she is like 100. If the 100 emoji over and over again. She's just so funny and her timing is impeccable. God, I love her. Really good work.
Yeah, she's Leia Thompson's daughter from Back to the Future.
Oh my God, for a second I saw Lea Michele in my head and I was like, no way.
Yeah, I have to say, like, at the first time I think even when I just saw the trailer for it, and like the fact that I was like really glad to see, like, you know, because I think romantic comedies, especially of the 90s, was like such a white genre of film. I was excited to see Lucy Liu and Taye Diggs like in this movie, but then also to be like, oh, like there are two people of color who are in these very prominent roles, but actually our two lead actors are still two, you know, white people. Straight people.
Yeah.
And that, like, you know, they both sort of, to me, were like sort of blandly good looking in a way that was like, okay, they're good looking, but not like, it doesn't necessarily like stick with me. But both of them, I mean, especially Zoe Deutsch, I think that's how to pronounce it, was like she was great. And even Glenn Powell, who plays Charlie, I thought was like pretty solid all the way through.
Well, and the supporting characters are really solid. They have the SNL guy playing the gay roommate. Pete Davidson was fantastic. They had the, God, I need to get better at names if I'm going to keep doing this podcast. The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt guy playing Titus Creepy Burgess. Tim. Titus, yep. He was solid down at the in the basement. And then even down to like her best friend, I got like really solid vibes. I'm actually going to get this name right because I think it's important. I got
Joanne
vibes.
Smalls?
Yeah, so she plays the best friend, right? The blonde one?
Meredith Hagner?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, sorry. No, I'm looking at the wrong... No, Joanne Smalls plays the terrible model girlfriend. Meredith Hagner is the roommate.
Okay, and then... So the engaged friend or whatever, whoever that is, I got Catherine Hahn vibes from her, who, like, Catherine Hahn is, like, in so many rom-coms as like the best friend, but does it such a good job as it, as that in that role. And then even like the waiter at the Mexican restaurant, like just good casting, good acting, like really solid supporting roles and, like conversations that like don't do anything for the plot, but make the movie delightful to watch, you know? I just like really appreciate it.
I would also say there was this, even though, I mean, I agree that like it's like the stuff on the edges is like really funny and like good and kind of like livens things up. But like, even when it's like sort of following the formula, I mean, partly is because I am just kind of a sucker for this stuff. But like, so if we're talking about like sort of different sort of tropes that romantic comedies follow. Like one of the things is also this idea of, you know, two people who don't like each other and maybe are brought together in this case to like bring their bosses together. Then they suddenly spend, you know, there's the night that they spend on their own, and then they realize that they actually have feelings for each other, although it may take them a while to realize that. I just thought, like, in this movie, that was done so well. And again, it wasn't that they aggressively subverted it or did anything particularly novel, but just, like, having the two assistants, like, spend time together. And then there's, like, one specific moment the whole scene in the rooftop party, I thought, like, I was just, like, dying because it was so romantic and so cute. And I just loved all of it.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I think, like, that's kind of, like you said, it's all very paint by numbers. They have that moment on the roof. And I think it's when the bride gives her toast to her fiance or whatever. Like, that could have been so bad. Do you know what I mean? Like, that could have been this, because it's a really important moment. It's the moment they realize, like, the way that they look at each other is a little bit different, right? And they might not even really like each other, but they care about each other a lot. And her speech could have been really bad. It could have been really poorly executed, but the writing there was perfect, you know, because it was funny and you're watching and you're like, man, this groom is getting like, you know, raked over roasted. The coals, yeah. Right now. Yeah. Like, poor guy. And then she flips it so quickly into how much she loves him. And you really like feel that, you know, you feel like it could be a real speech that you watch that kind of gives you a little goosebump or a little welling of the eyes, you know, and that is integral to them caring about each other or realizing they care about each other. And they pulled it off. You know what I mean? It's like, it's cliche, you know, that's going to happen, but the words matter there. And they did a good job with that.
Yeah. And there's a specific moment at the very, like a tag at the end of that scene where the pizza guy shows up. And that just, like, absolutely killed me when you realized that, like, the pizza was on the way the whole time.
Well, and the friend knew, right? Like, the friend had already spotted that they would like each other and was like, you go get pizza. It's fine. And I agree exactly. I, like, actually made a note of that. She knew the whole time, like, you guys go be alone. And it was the best meal they ever had. Yeah. John is like, do you feel slam dunked on? 'Cause I feel like we did a pretty good job.
No, I mean, I don't feel that slam dunked on. I one thing that the party scene made me realize is that it's very hard for actors to play drunk. And, like, no one can really do that. It's very hard to do that convincingly.
Did you feel like they didn't do a good job or that they did?
I feel like they didn't.
Okay.
I kind of disagree. I feel like one of the things that I noticed, too, especially with the drunk pizza scene, is how they, like, kind of play into like memes a little bit. Like, there's so many memes out there about like drunk girls wanting food, right? And like I feel like they executed it. Like, it was like it was like what a meme might be inspired by. You know what I mean? Like, her caring so much about that pizza being okay. Like, are you okay? And he's like, yeah, I'm fine. She's like, I was talking to the pizza. You know, like, that actually feels a little bit real to me. You know, like, when you're drunk and that pizza is all that matters. But I do agree that, like, sometimes, like, playing drunk can either be, like, done really, really well or really, really poorly. And I don't, like, find that it was either in this case, but the dialogue was there, whether the acting was or not.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, it was very well executed rom-com. I am maybe being a little bit too demanding.
Did you say that? I don't remember you saying that.
It was fine. It was good.
I agree.
I mean, it wasn't stellar. I'm not going to rank it among the best rom-coms I've ever seen, but...
What is the best rom-com you've ever seen? Is it When Harry Met Sally?
No, I don't think When Harry Met Sally is... I like the rom-coms that play with expectations a little bit more. I thought Big Sick was actually a really good sort of weird rom-com that
I agree. Was
amazing. I thought 500 Days of Summer was a really great rom-com that plays with expectations in a way that's interesting. And then, well, yeah, I mean, then there are like the clap, like anything that Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan kind of did together, I'm kind of a sucker for, which is weird and makes me old, but you know.
Yeah, no, I would give it a must watch, honestly.
You would give this a must watch.
Yep.
I guess the other thing that I'm curious about is like, there's this sort of question of to what extent, I mean, it seems like Hollywood, the big studios are sort of ramping down their rom-com production, and there's, you know, potentially if this does well, and it seems like at least there's a lot of positive discussion about it, that you know, you'll start to see more and more of these kinds of movies premiering on Netflix. Do we feel like that, like Netflix is a good place for it?
Yeah, I do actually, because I feel like Netflix is really good at a couple things. One is like escapism, right? Like they're very good at like putting in front of you exactly what it is you might be wanting. Like even if it's a little too real, like escapism in that way. And then also just like messing around with cliche or messing around with nostalgia, right? Whether we feel played by that or not is a different matter, but they're going to do it and they're probably going to do a really good job of it. Like, I mean, you remember when we did Everything Sucks, right? Like we were so worried about that, thinking it was going to suck, and you guys ended up really liking it. So
yeah,
I didn't see that. I heard it was terrible though.
That, no, it's not. It looks terrible, but then when you actually watch it, it's not like amazing, but it's like it each gets, episode for the first few gets better than the one before, and it like kind of deepens it over time.
Well, and Daryl wrote this post when the trailer came out that was like, this is bullshit, like Everything Sucks is coming out, like Netflix is fucking with us and like playing with our nostalgia, like if you watch it if you want, like it was like four lines in this post. And then we ended up reviewing it for the podcast, and like Daryl was like, I really liked it, like I care a lot about all of the characters, and like, so they're good at it. They're good at messing with your memory a little bit, you know, and pulling on those heartstrings. So
if there's any genre that benefits from algorithmically sort of doing a bunch of data analysis on beats and what works and what doesn't, it's the rom-com, right? I mean,
I think so, but like that, I think that's the problem that the studios ran into, and that's the concern here. Like if Netflix does turn it into there is a formula, and you can't like, you can't disregard the formula, but if you don't take extra care, then it ends up like all the shitty rom-coms that have come in the last like 10 years. And so I think you have to find the right balance there. I hope, hopefully Netflix will, if it continues to pump out movies and shows like this, is about like taking the extra care and putting in the extra effort on these moments of dialogue and these punchlines so that they, you know, like tiny, tiny things like when Pete Davidson's character is with a dude and they're playing Third Eye Blind. Like that could not have been more perfect. Like that was the perfect song choice. He hears it playing and he's like, ah, oh, he's with a dude, you know? And you just, I love that. Like that is so funny. And it could have been any other song. It could have been any other signal and it wouldn't have been as good. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, if they're willing to apply the formula in a way that shows extra care and caution, then I'm all for it. I really am.
I think one of the moments that was like that for me was like, there's a moment where Harper, the Zoe Deutsch character, is like just stuffing her face with popcorn, which is like a very kind of familiar rom-com scene, except that she's not eating it out of a bag, but she has this little poncho strapped to her body that's filled with popcorn. And like, I just thought that was so good.
Or like when they're buying the, when they go to buy the ring and the shop clerk is like, oh, this happens all the time, don't worry about it. Well, not the part where you like set up your bosses and like it all blew up in your face and stuff. I'm not listening. Like I wasn't listening. Like that is like such, like it's so useless, but it's so perfect, you know, like just the little things matter. And they, I feel like in each instance of these little things, like I didn't see one that slipped up. Like I might even not even like the story, you know what I mean? But like the movie was still awesome because of all those little moments of dialogue. So I don't know how many times I can say that. So I'm going to stop.
I think that's fine. I think that's great. Any final thoughts?
No, that's it. I also really liked it. I'm really glad that Netflix. I mean, I think this. It's in some ways, it sort of is a shame that this isn't a movie that's going to release theatrically, because I imagine this would be like an amazing like date movie and stuff too. But Netflix seems like a good home. And people, if you're interested in, you know, feeling good and feeling full of loving feelings, like this is a good movie to check out.
And let us know in the comments section if you'd like to vote on what we review next. I think that might be a good idea. Like, what if we put it on a Twitter poll?
Yeah, Twitter, email. There's a bunch of different ways you can reach out to us, but I think there's always a lot of different stuff, and so that it's not just governed by our sort of like what we randomly see on Netflix. Feel free to let us know what you're interested in. So just a quick reminder while we're just telling listeners to do things, if you haven't already, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or the podcast app of your choice. Also leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And John, thank you for joining us.
Thanks,
and we'll be back next week. We'll be right back.